Right. I'd like to welcome everybody this evening. We have a nice crowd, which is a nice change. On this Monday, April 27th, at the Education Center, for this version of the Brecksville-Bradley Heights Board of Education regular meeting. This is a meeting of the Board of Education in public for the purpose of conducting the school district's business, and is not to be considered a public community meeting. It is time for public participation during the meeting as an indicated agenda item. Roll call, please.
Mr. Jason, this is Bud Allen.
Yes.
Mr. Bosom, yes.
Yes.
Mr. Diggler?
Yes.
Yes, please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item C, approval of agenda items. Can I have a motion, please?
I'll move.
Second.
Mr. Jansen, members of the board, I have presented to you a document that says addendum to the board agenda, and we omitted a name on the revised classified staffing recommendations sheet, and so you see there the name has been placed back on there. It's in tab 6, and for you, it's notated on tab 6 in the color of red. The actual type is in red, so that you can see the change there. That's it.
Yes, sir.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item D, recognition. Cuyahoga Valley Career Center Student Competition Awards. Mr. Prebles.
This is one of the reasons so many people are here this evening. I'd like to ask Mr. Mueller, if he would please, to come up front. We're going to introduce some students to you who attend Cuyahoga Valley Career Center. And this is a great night because in competitions within their fields of study, these students have done quite well at the regional and state level. So we're very happy to bring them before the board this evening. And we have excellence pins, we have certificates, we have gift certificates, and we have flash drives for all of the students that will be here this evening. So it's a big night. I hope you brought a purse. So, Mr. Diggler, if you would, please.
The students that we're going to recognize tonight for their outstanding performance at state regional competitions were recognized last week by the CBCC board, and we are now in the awards and recognition season. So not only will these students who we're going to honor here tonight, but we have a number of other students in various programs at the Cuyahoga Valley Career Center who are going to be recognized in the upcoming weeks. But tonight, we have a number of students here. Do you want me to talk about the people that are not here? I'll announce them.
I think we should.
Okay. But let's go through the list. We're going to bring them up. The first student to be honored who is here this evening is Anthony Cantor-Jones. Anthony, you want to come up? Design
and becoming a state qualifier at the Business Professional of America's regional competition. Brian. Students who we invited for recognition included Andrea Vramovic for cosmetology, Carrie Bartow for future educators, Sophia Begun for future education competition, Kyle McNeil for his Java programming and visual basic programming awards at regional competition, and finally Morgan Roberts for placing second in her career health display. So our students do an outstanding job. These students, as well as the others that I mentioned, really kind of underscore what we talk about when we say that every student, as a 21st century learner, can choose various pathways to the future. And these young men here are examples of that. So congratulations to everyone.
Second.
Mr. Brown.
10 sheets, and I will focus on one as normal. Questions on any of the others, feel free to ask. We'll give our best shot to answer those. You can see with the tax revenue, when the account those swings these significantly versus the forecast this year. That settlement is occurring in April. Last year it happened in March, so you're seeing a significant variance there, most of which will correct itself next month. I do know what that number is now. We will come in slightly under the forecasted numbers, largely due to board revision, commercial valuation challenges, and refunds that were issued for past tax years that came out of this year's settlement. Working to confirm that exact number as recent as today again. So but it'll be close, but we will be slightly under when we get to that. Tangible personal property tax will actually come in slightly over, so I'm getting a little ahead of myself by a month, but when you see numbers that large, that negative, I want to allay any concerns that we will be fairly close when this thing evens out by the end of the year. The $29,000 was a mid-year change in our allocations for special education transportation from the Department of Education. The things I'm mentioning as well will get reflected in the May forecast update that will be presented to you next month as well. So the all other operating revenues, we will also be modifying that in forecast. We know that that number is favorable due to the tuition, special education tuition billings that my office does with student services for our out-of-district students that are accepted here, whether it be court-placed, foster-placed, or otherwise symptoms. There's district placements that occur. So we are favorable in that revenue category. On the expense side, nothing really has changed much from last month. We're less than $100,000 variance on $22 million in a salary projection, which is pretty good at this point. Some of that timing of supplemental payments, the estimate over is there for retirement insurance benefits will largely be eliminated in April because we issued our workers' compensation payment. We know that premium is increased this year, so that will largely eliminate that. The other items, I took the encumbrances out of the forecast this year, just trying to see where those actually track and get a real good idea of our expenditures versus what's encumbered at year end. Last year we ended with about 250,000, as I recall, in encumbrances. We're not too far different than that right now if you look at purchase services, supplies, materials, capital outlay. So we're trending pretty well in that area. The other objects, while that appears to be a large variance, that too will be eliminated because most of that's county auditor and treasurer fees that are deducted automatically from the tax settlement, and that occurs in April. So my best ballpark, I think at this point overall we're probably within $200,000-$300,000 of being accurate to forecast because we'll have the swing, I know, in the two tax items, one unfavorable, one favorable, but the unfavorable in the general property tax will be offset by the all other operating revenues increasing. So there'll be a little bit in the expenditure, but you know, we're never going to budget where it's zero at the end of the year, and people are begging to be able to spend a dollar. It just won't happen. So there's a lot of estimation that happens in some of those. So all in all, it's a responsible, favorable report. Questions?
We'll just have the discussion in a little while on the what-ifs going forward out of Columbus.
Superintendent has a few slides to share about that we've discussed, and he's very well versed.
Fantastic. Comments or questions? Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhauer?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item G1, appropriation adjustments. Mr. Burdine, can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Burdine?
Thank you. Those two, Fund 401 is just, it's our auxiliary services funds that we handle on behalf of our non-public schools. Just a slight increase in their allocations that have accrued and their interest earnings for this year that have accrued.
Fund 004 is an increase because of the fundraising and other monies that have accrued in the turf replacement account that we will be utilizing for that specific project, with the balance of funds covered out of the permanent improvement account. So we're seeking your approval to be able to utilize those dollars for that project.
Questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhard?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Zager?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. Item G2, establish the High School Robotics Club account, 200-955-ALPHA. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Really nothing more to add other than we're establishing High School Robotics Club, an offshoot of the STEM programs that continue to develop here in the district. That's a new student activity club that has been requested to be established, and pleased to do so.
No questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Zager?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. Item G3, approval of the resolution accepting the amounts and rates as determined by the Budget Commission and authorizing necessary tax levies and certifying them to the county fiscal officer for 2016 per the attachment in tab 3. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Annual resolution. Not sure why it's required, but that's an editorial comment. But those tax levies have been approved, passed by our voters. The county does this each year, and I bring it to you and ask you to approve it because they want us to send it back to them. Really, nothing changes beyond what the electorate has approved for us to have in terms of millage.
Questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernhard?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Zager?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. Item H, communications. Mr. Preble.
Mr. Preble, I just can help me with that. And there is one. There's not. It's time.
I have lots of techie help here tonight with Mr. Kinkoff from the audience. He makes me a little nervous.
Show slide there. Left, there. All the way from beginning, left.
Look at him go.
I told you he was well versed.
I tell you.
That was probably the best I'm going to do. I always get nervous, I told Mr. Jansen, when I speak about the budget when Mr. Verdine is in the room, because he is an expert. And in relation to him, I am definitely a novice. So if you would touch the slide there, please, Rick. What I want to talk a little bit about, ladies and gentlemen, is what's happening in the state at the state legislature. So, you know, the governor's budget came out. We talked to our community and we learned that the governor's budget was about $3.9 million reduction in our school district. And before we get into that, I wanted to share with people kind of what has happened over time with our tangible personal property replacement. If you remember back in 2005, there was a shift in the state law which said that no longer would the state of Ohio be collecting tangible personal property taxes on business inventory. That was the time they created the CAT tax, which was to replace TPP, and they were going to provide schools with tangible personal property replacement dollars. So we received the same amount of money, basically, at this particular point in time, but the shift was from an inventory tax here to giving the school district tangible personal property reimbursement taxes dollars. And so up there at the top, you can see a figure that we received at the height of our dollars coming into us from the replacement funds, which was about $3.53 million. And over the last couple of years, with the reduction of that in the state biennial budget, you can see that figure coming down. And you can see where we are right now. We receive about $1.7 million per year in tangible personal property replacement funds. And this, in the governor's budget, these lines right here are what are being jeopardized. The governor's budget would suggest that this money goes away totally, so there is no longer any dollars coming to us from tangible personal property inventory taxes that was replaced. and then it would be escalated to be leaving our district down to zero. That equates to about $1.7 million per year. So you can see what that looks like across the life of at least the last 10 years. The next slide then talks about our foundation formula in the state of Ohio. And the foundation formula is based on a formula that for many of us it can be difficult to figure out. That is definitely something that we try to keep our eye on. But you can see that over time we have received upwards of $5.5 million, and then you can see that legislation has changed that so that in 2010, when the state was really beginning to feel, or at least the legislature was really beginning to feel the deficits in the state of Ohio, you see a significant reduction in our school district, and you see that playing out for the rest of the time all the way through fiscal year 2015. And this fluctuates a little bit, and that's dependent upon certain things that are happening to us with federal dollars, special education students coming to and out of the district, transportation reimbursements that we receive. But for the most part, we receive about $5 million or $5.1 million from the state of Ohio. And so the governor's proposal would be reducing this $5 million by about another $500,000 next year, $500,000 next year, and then another $400,000 the year after, for a total of about $900,000 loss. So from our five million that we received, we'd probably be around the $4.2 or $4.3 million range from the state of Ohio. So this gives you a sense of what our district has gone through over the last few years, and what the governor's proposal would suggest, that we are going to lose approximately $3.9 million. So the next slide gives you a sense of what does that look like. And so I'd like to draw your attention to this line right here. What Mr. Burdine just went over was our five-year forecast, or at least the May, preparing for the May update. And you see that it would suggest that in fiscal year 19, under the current circumstances with the reductions we've made and with our fiscal efficiencies that we put into place, that we would be right about here, which is about $4.5 million. If you go to this line, the governor's budget proposal takes $3.9 million away from us in the first 2 years, and then $2.6 million every year after. Remember, $1.7 in tangible personal property reimbursement, and another $900,000 in funding. So that would change our cash balance from $4.5 million to about $4.6 million in a deficit. So the change in the governor's proposal equates to about $9.1 million. Now, this line right here is the tangible personal property two-year phase-out. If we were to have the phase-out as it's presented, and we not lose the tangible personal property taxes, that equates to about $800,000, $900,000 we would lose in the first 2 years. We'd maintain the tangible personal property tax, which would be a reduction of about $6.1 million for us as a school district, and that means that we would be at about $1.5 million in a deficit, and that is represented with this line. So you can see the significant change that occurs in our school district over time based on the governor's proposal and based on a phase-out of tangible personal property tax. And so the next slide that I'd like to show you is the very same thing, only shown in a different way. So you can see the line projecting out into fiscal year 19. And this is a significant, obviously, issue for our school district in light of all of the things that we have done. We were here, the projection puts us here, and we're hoping for something along these lines. So if you go to the next slide, Mr. Burdine, our request of the state legislature with House Bill 64. Right now, the House bill that has passed through the Finance Committee, Education Committee, and is now an amendment at the legislature, would suggest that there is a hold harmless legislation that goes for the next 2 years, which would mean that we do not lose any of our tangible personal property reimbursement and that we would not lose any of our foundation funding dollars. That's what the House has passed on. That amendment has made its way to the Senate, where the Senate will go through and they will make determinations as to whether or not they believe the House version that is on their desk at this point in time is appropriate. After the Senate goes through its process, the governor ultimately has the right to veto, line item veto, anything within a budget that he does not prefer or does not think that he wants to move forward. So right now, what we have learned is the $3.9 million that we believed was part of the governor's budget is still in place because it's not completed. We just have an amended budget that has gone to the Senate. So what we are requesting at this point in time is that the tangible personal replacement funds be transitioned to the district's formula funding with continuous guarantee status. So when we talk to our legislators and we send information to our government, simply stated, or as simple as I can state it, right now, the House considers or suggests that there is enough money in their budgeting process to cover the cost that we the dollars that we currently receive. So they are suggesting that their budget could withhold us maintaining our tangible personal property taxes and our funding formula dollars. What we are suggesting is if the House or the Senate's version is going to eliminate tangible personal property taxes, because that seems to be the only thing on the table right now for the Senate that's a big, big item, we would like for that money to be transitioned to the funding formula in the state of Ohio so that a district like ours would not lose any more funding from the state. So what we're suggesting, again, the money is in two pots right now. We'd like to combine it into one. And the second part of this is that we would like for the guarantee language that currently exists in the state law right now to be maintained with the new legislation, which says on a continuous basis, those dollars will never shift back away from our school district. Now, we all know that every 2 years there is a biennial budget. We all know that every 2 years the law changes, and most of the time education, because it is such a large part of the state's budget, is something that is scrutinized and looked at very closely. But what we're suggesting now is that we maintain the same amount of dollars coming into our district by transitioning that TPP to funding and never going back to TPP, never having it in two pots again where a district like ours is on the cliff every 2 years wondering what we're going to do. It also provides us a better opportunity with our local community to have the discussion and the conversation about the budget, about the forecast, without having so many factors involved. It also would provide us to have, instead of a two-year cycle, we'd have a guarantee in there that hopefully would not be subject to change again year after year. So, again, the House has made its amendment. They passed it on to the Senate. It is much more favorable on the House side than it was. We are still vulnerable, though, because the Senate may change in whatever direction they would like. But we believe right now the tangible personal property taxes is the most vulnerable, as it is only maintained by about 200 of the 613 school districts in the state of Ohio. The funding formula is in every school district, so that is on the front burner for all school districts. We are in the minority as a school district with the tangible personal property side of things. And so the last slide that I have is now the newest list of individuals that we believe we are going to try to provide information to regarding our local circumstances. And so I've provided that information for folks. Obviously, this will be on our website, and we will also be working with our PSOs, constant contact information, and we are going to be putting together a press release for our local community so that they are aware of our new circumstances and what they can do to try to help us receive a more favorable decision at the state level. And I would like to say, I would like to thank our community, our PSOs, and all the folks who have been involved in the constant contact information, those of you that have reached out to not only our local Congress folks, but our senators, because they are listening and they have made adjustments not only here but across the state of Ohio based on local community participation. And I want to shout out to Representative Angelski, Marlene Angelski, who contacted me on Wednesday just after the vote took place to inform me that, in fact, the House had passed this amendment. So she was very excited about that and felt very good about that and the possibilities that lie ahead. So those are my comments on the budget and the update as far as we know right now.
If you have questions, Rick will be happy to answer.
You did do a great job with the presentation.
I had one question. You talked about, you know, the House passed it. The Senate's going to pass a version of it. They'll be the same. And then the governor, he has a line item veto. So is like the TPP component a line in the bill that can be struck and vetoed? And
that's what we're
understanding, yes.
Okay.
And I was in a conversation with a person today that I respect who has a lot of insight on this, who said that there is some talk that the TPP, unlike many other budgets, seems to have an easier line item, has easier line item exposure than it has seen in the past, than they have seen in the past. So we're really, you know, keeping our fingers crossed, but you also have to recognize that the House and the Senate are a Republican majority, the governor is a Republican, and we're hoping that if the Senate has a favorable opinion of the House's side, that the governor will acknowledge that, because those are
like the Medicaid expansion.
Well, directed.
I'm just saying, we have pressure right on that guy. He's a wild card. He's you got to watch him.
Hope is not a strategy. So we're very thankful for the people who have made their voices public, speaking to Representative Danielski and Senator Patton, who, to their credit, have been very responsive, very engaged, very interested in learning what's going on in detail. As you can tell, this doesn't fit in a soundbite real well. It's fairly complicated, so a lot of people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about it. But the impact of this from the graphs, if you can remember when they go through the zero line, it impacts this district tremendously, and it also impacts this district very soon. If the governor's budget, as it was written, as it was proposed, were to fly, we would be talking about sources of revenue very imminently. Because for all the work that's been done over the last 5 years to get this ship righted, that would cause a big leak. So this is, financially, this is what we're talking about these days.
I would like to add, if I could, you know, Scott said that Marlene Agnelski had called him, but I want to tell you she's been working really, really hard on this, because I went down to the OSBA Legislative Conference, maybe it was the last week of March, beginning of April or so, and she had him on speed dial, and she came up to me, and she was telling me the things that she, you know, people she had talked to and what she was trying to do. So I think she was actually very instrumental in probably getting some of these changes for us.
So, you know, I've heard that our constituency is very educated. I just was at the track meet. Somebody brought this up as I said I was going to a board meeting, and this is on their minds. And it's a good use of social media,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very thankful, because, like Scott said, it's that pressure that they're hearing us down at the state level that's making all the difference, I think, especially with us. We're not going under the radar. But so that's fabulous.
Yeah. Say, do we have any sense? We sent out that Kathy sent out that blast with, you know, to contact your state representatives. Do we have any sense of how many people actually did that? I'm sure it's just anecdotal, but
I don't know the number, but I'm confident that there were many people who took the time to do that, because
she
I heard
can,
that.
She can
from
see
Marlene.
Who opened it for the Wisconsin contact. Is that how she did it? So there's an open rate, so she can see what that was. We just don't know. But it was showing up on Facebook. It's showing up on other forms of social media. You just hit share, and the conversations were great. People who wouldn't have had conversations necessarily just, you know, were engaged.
Sure.
That's a good question. I think Frank had a question.
Sure. Just as a suggestion, has anyone looked at contacting the time Governor Taylor? She's a former CPA and kind of grasps the numbers better than and then also Rob Frost heads up the Republican Party in Ohio account. It would be another person I would suggest reach out to, as trying to get you mainstream your contacts to the right people.
I've been going through the party apparatus, and I can't get the governor to call me. But I've talked to a number of people in the party, both in Northeast Ohio, and I got a call from Columbus, and they listen kind of.
Lieutenant Governor Taylor.
I haven't talked to Taylor.
She was at CBCC at Ramta. And
oh,
I,
did she make
oh, yeah. And no, I heard people engaging her. So she was actually in Rexville the last few weeks.
She might have better access to the governor. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's...
She lives in Akron. Does she live
She's from this area.
Yeah. Yeah. She lives here. She resides here.
Green area.
Okay. Yeah, try that.
She's by your people, Rick.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Item I, will the public persons wishing to address the Board of Education may do so at this point. No formal action will be taken on subjects that are not included on this agenda until the Board has had an opportunity to study. Any comments regarding personnel must be submitted in writing through the Office of the Superintendent. In order for the Board to complete the planned agenda in an effective and efficient manner and to provide sufficient opportunities for members of the public to be heard, hearing of the public shall be limited to a maximum of 30 minutes, during which each speaker shall be limited to a maximum of 3 minutes. If anybody wishes to be heard, please state your name and address.
My name is Frank Fantosi. I live at 4555 Summit Circle here in Brexville. And I'm speaking on behalf of the Brown family, Turkovich family, Bailey family. Richard Bailey's here, so he'll speak as well. Jurassics and the Gergats, obviously our family. Basically, we're asking the board to consider putting in the rules of conflicts of interest, of preventing conflicts of interest in our high school sports. 2 years we've tried to work with the administration and the athletic department to no avail, and so we feel the next step is to raise this issue with the board and ask you from a standpoint of a level of integrity and best practice that conflicts of interest don't belong in organizations, especially organizations such as this, that strives for higher standards. And I look at the plaque we have on the wall preparing our students for their futures. That's one of the things. If you look at federal government, there's rules on conflicts of interest. Resolve is one of our bigger employers here, has conflict of interest rules dealing with their vendors. My profession, the legal profession. Basically, what's the start of all this, if you look at our high school soccer program, currently today the entire program is really run by an outside organization, BTSA. All the coaches are from that program. Does everyone understand what a conflict of interest rule? I don't want to assume.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and clearly, you have competing interests here. The primary goal is the protection of our student athletes and their families, to provide them with a transparent and conflict-free environment. But the competing interest is the success of the BTSA program. For that program to grow, their players have to play. And so, you just can't have those competing interests in the high school program. And so what we're asking the board to do, and we can provide a lot of examples, and I know we only have 3 minutes here, but I think that, this is something that we need to do for the integrity of the school, integrity of the high school sports program. And ultimately, it's to protect and provide a safe and transparent and conflict-free environment for our student-athletes.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak on it a little bit. The same thing, I work for a company called Craig's Area, Richard Bailey. I work for a company that has ethics policy, where we have to follow certain rules, and that a lot of this has been driven over things that have occurred over the years. And I think that, it's really important for the school to set the example and make sure that what's happened in the sports program, soccer is just one example. I think it's very important for them to set the policies in place so that everybody understands what the rules are, and that at least we have that transparency that Frank is talking about. And that's basically what we'd like to see, is just make sure that we don't have this conflict of interest taking place. No matter what the sport is, and it really doesn't have to be sports, it can be anything. It's just so that it works for everybody. And I think most of us are old enough to work in companies before and understand that there are a lot of things that went on when we first went to work, in certain ways where the rules have changed because of that. So
thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard this evening?
Petra Laszlo, 8433 Timber Trail, Brexville. I normally sit here quietly observing, so please excuse me if I'm tongue-tied. It's my first time addressing the board. Since it is testing week, I thought it would be applicable with, I personally informed the board that my third grader at Chippewa will not be sitting for the Clark assessment. We decided to opt her out. I know that's technically a legal term, but I believe it's a very poorly written assessment, and the lag in the score recording doesn't really aid the teachers in determining placement or promotion. And I understand the consequences for the district, that it was a very, very hard decision for my husband and I to make. And we actually had her sit for the PBA portion. It was an all-around bad experience for her and for a lot of her classmates. And her grades began to drop right after. She was exhausted. One day they were studying the area and perimeter. The next morning they were, you know, preparing for the test and learning for the test. You know, and they're learning how to take this really, really complicated assessment. And I personally actually sat down and took a practice test. It was for third grade reading, which I know they're not assessed in this year. But fourth grade is coming up soon. And I consider myself a fairly intelligent person with a law degree, and I was stumbling on the questions. So I just wanted to let you guys know, and I want to urge you to please advocate for our children when you're speaking to our representatives in Columbus. And I know you're doing that. I just wanted to thank you for the wonderful job that you're doing representing their interests. Financial matters, but also in these other matters as well.
Can I we do spend a lot of time talking about the finance. The organization that we are members of, called the Alliance for High Quality Education in the State of Ohio, much of what I discussed today was from a financial perspective, but I can tell you that last week there are 14 superintendents on the executive board of that, which I am happy to serve on for our Board of Education. We talked about the testing in the state of Ohio. We talked about what's happening with students, what's happening in classrooms. We came up with some thoughts that we are putting together, much like we lobby for finance, we're lobbying for tests. One test per year from one vendor per year, as opposed to varied vendors. One platform, meaning we have the PART platform and we have the AIR platform. That's the technology being used, trying to get that down to one particular test and trying to reduce the amount of time the tests are taken. And actually, school districts who are performing well on the performance index and whose students are showing growth in our value-added data looks very good. We're asking the state of Ohio to give districts who are experiencing those positive things opportunities to better utilize their, what you would know as diagnostic testing, what's happening on a daily basis with students, informing us about our instruction, as opposed to waiting until the end of a school year to be able to make some general assessments about how children are doing and ultimately how well our programs are doing. So I think you're on to something tonight. I think it's a very timely conversation for our Board of Education, and one that we are also working on in Columbus. As well as we are on funding, we're also talking about the extensiveness of testing in the state of Ohio and how we can reduce that for our students and make it more user-friendly for them, more diagnostic in nature for us as schools, and more informative for parents as well. So thank you very much for your comments.
Mr. Pavlos, just to clarify, and for Pedro, I think we're held harmless. Is that correct? If people opt out, that is not
for two.
Yeah, well, for the current year, that is a right that, I mean, the parents obviously own, but it's not a mark against our district, but there's no ramifications, if you will.
I believe, no. I think there will be ramifications across the state, though, in the sense that there are parents who are opting out.
Sure.
That is a right of the parent, and that will influence the scores throughout all the school districts, which makes the entire system very difficult to reconcile when you think about performance index and ranking schools across the state of Ohio. So I think the Department of Education has some tough times ahead, as do the legislators, on what all testing this year actually means from a performance side. But you're right. I think we're going to be in a whole harmless pattern here.
And that took a lot of courage for you to do. I know that, you know, I'm a teacher also, so good. And you do what's right for your... I'm sure it was.
I was told that she would receive a score of zero. That's how the building score would be calculated. So it was a really tough decision. And we did have her sit for the first part of the PA.
In the beginning, that was kind of what the schools were being told.
Yeah.
And as the conversation has opened up over the year, I think that there's...
As parents have started to,
right,
across the state, push back, then they rethought that decision, didn't they?
And there was a lot of rumbling going on in the district as well amongst parents. Not many have stepped up to opt out for children, but a very large number of them.
officer should be heard this evening.
And in fairness, I forgot to read something that one of the parents who couldn't be here read, so if you guys would kind of inform me, let me read it on behalf of Angela Verget. She's traveling. She says, I'd love to share my story as a forestry. I'm out of town. She gave me permission to read this. If you guys want a copy, I can provide it. I'm almost certain that Allison was the first BTS player to defect to a club team. She was originally a member of Tony Nikolai's, and he certainly exercised his wrath on her. I'm certain to this day was to send a message to the rest of his club. What he personally said on separate occasions to me and my husband, Allison, is beyond alarming. And he personally sucked all the interest in soccer out of her. We took this matter to Dan Kalinske, and it fell on the same deaf ears you have found, referencing to me. So I wanted to read that for the record. She asked me to do that, because she couldn't be here tonight.
And just for Mr. Nick, just being a coach's wife, I know that Tony had done the best that he could a lot of times. So he's not here to defend himself. So I want to make sure I say he has volunteered a lot of his time for our district, and I know we're thankful.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. But at the end of the day,
to debate.
No, I'm not trying to debate. I just
want to. At the end of the day, I don't care.
Does anybody else wish to be here this evening?
Well, no, I mean, I do want to make a comment on this topic. I mean, it's an interesting topic, and having had three kids, one still in the system, two that went through it, so many of our coaches and people that are involved in other areas are involved outside in, right, almost any sport has an outside of the school season, right? Baseball, soccer, volleyball. You know, my daughter was in dance, and she was on the dance team, and the coach retained for the dance team was her dance instructor at Prana. And so I'm just wondering if you looked at how that would even work, because, you know, if you had a very stringent no conflict of interest, then, you know, I don't even know how you could even make that work, because so many athletes and members and other organizations participate outside of school in clubs or whatever external organizations, and if you try to put up a firewall and say you can't be associated with any of it, I don't even know how you would make that work, how you would have enough quality coaches and instructors and everything across all the programs. So have you looked at other schools? Does anybody have one of these conflict of interest that
we can do the research, but I mean, at the end of the day, higher standards require all of us to do more. Okay, I didn't say it was easy. It can be done. And we made suggestions. One of the suggestions we made is we don't care if a coach comes from a program, but once he becomes a coach here in this program, he has to disassociate himself from that program. At least on the surface, at least make it look like there's some disassociation, and we don't. There's really been no proof that it's hard to attract coaches or get quality coaches.
Well, here's the thing. I'll just make one suggestion. This is once again, there's 612 school districts in Ohio. Go find other districts that have conflict of interest, and if you could bring them to us, we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
Because you say, well, it's not that hard. Well, okay, go find districts that have conflict of interest, because you may say it's. I mean, we have a hard enough time attracting coaches now. With compensation and pay and a lot of them volunteer. So it's easy to say, well, you just put in a firewall, a conflict of interest, and then you can't be associated. So our gymnastics program, you're going to say, oh, if you're going to go to Gym World, then those coaches can't be involved. I mean, you can go across a lot of different activities, and it would be easy. What we deal with a lot of times is that, you know, there's 612 districts in Ohio, and there's even other districts outside of the state. So if you can find some examples and send them our way, we're happy to take a look at it. But we need something to go on, because this would be very difficult to kind of craft.
I understand. Leading change isn't easy. There's a lot of rules on conflict of interest. The bottom line is either you as a board believe that protecting the students' interest is the highest priority in doing the right things and being changed. The best organizations in the world aren't looking to see what everybody else is doing. They're trying to do the best thing they can. Okay? And you know, most of the people who coach, as you say, you don't make a living coaching in a high school sport. That's just, you do it because you're passionate about coaching. And I can tell you specifically, one of our coaches who was at our program, I told him, if you take the job here, you can't coach with us. He didn't even get interviewed. I mean,
That's fine, and, you know, obviously this isn't a forum to debate it, but, you know, that all sounds good, you know, to take the initiative and lead, but if you can't go out and find other districts in this area that have conflict of interest, there's probably a reason. Okay, and if you find something,
yeah, that's really our responsibility to go out and do that.
Well, you're coming to what I'm offering you a suggestion. Okay, that if you want us to take a look at this, instead of saying here's a blank piece of paper, go create a whole conflict of interest and make it workable. I'm suggesting like what we do in other areas is we look to see, geez, okay, what are some of the, and not this is across all areas of education. We look for, hey, is somebody doing something here innovative that works, and why not copy it? Why reinvent the wheel? So all I'm offering is suggestions for yourself and for any other parent that's involved is that if you would like to see the board look at conflict of interest, if you can find some districts out there that have conflict of interest, it'd be great to feed it back to us so we could have something to look at to see is it workable.
But I'll leave with this. Scott and Dan raised issues about some of the challenges. Again, we wanted to make it very easy. Understanding that might be, you know, difficult. And so we thought it was that the easy rule was, you know, because we didn't want to say you could hire from these programs. Our saying is if you do, once you start coaching here, you have to not. I mean, like our head coach.
Well, we're not writing policy this evening, and we're not soliciting policy input at the moment. So thank you. Any other people wish to be heard this evening? Item I, administrative reports and discussion. Troubles.
We have to guess with us this evening. In line with our district's strategic vision and our 21st century skills, continuation of technology integration, we've invited some folks from our district today. They have presented at the College of William & Mary recently, providing professional development for teachers across the northeastern Ohio. About what's happening in our school district and what we're doing with our students. So I'm going to invite Scott Kinkoff to start, introduce everyone that's here this evening, and give the board our presentation on what's been happening in our classrooms and how that's assisting and helping our students. Thank you.
A brief introduction. This is a national conference, so our teachers went to middle school, and Dr. Schatz, our gifted teachers, went to the College of William & Mary, presented how they are approaching teaching and learning in the 21st century, and how they are adapting new ways of learning for our students. So my only role is to push buttons tonight, and then a very brief introduction, and I believe Teresa B is going first.
Yes. I'm Teresa Dean. I teach at Central School, fifth grade gifted program. One of the groups that I held was for the intermediate fourth, fifth, and sixth, and Kathy Witowitz actually presented with me. We presented how we're taking the William & Mary materials in our curriculum and taking them to the next level to make them 21st century skills. One of the things that I do in my classroom is for our vocabulary, you see the web up front, and that web is a William & Mary created web that we use with our series and our books. So taking it to the next level, the children go through and they fill out the web independently. They choose a vocabulary word, or I give them one, and they do the organizer. Taking it further to the next step in 21st century skills, what you see to the next, to the side there, we use a program called Padlet. It's online. And the students are able then to post videos that they create to help better understand the vocabulary words they're given and to help their peers better understand vocabulary. In addition, they take, using Google Slides, they also recreate the web in a different format using also pictures to help understand vocabulary. So ultimately, all students now have access to several vocabulary words from our unit in order to be able to study from and learn from one another. They can work on the Padlet simultaneously, so they can all be working in the Padlet together and learning from each other as well. So that's one thing I do with my vocabulary. The other web that I use from our literature series, there's a literature web where the students talk about the keywords, main ideas, feelings, symbols, imagery, structure of the text. And what the students do is they have a choice to go to either Google Docs. So for differentiation purposes, I've introduced them to several different websites that they can use to have discussions. So one of the websites I do uses Today's Meet, and each discussion group, so what you see in the middle under where it says listen is a discussion group. So the students sit at their desks and they're able to have a discussion. This way everybody feels comfortable in participating in the discussion. So even those quiet kids who don't normally speak out have a voice in the discussion as well. Some choose to use Today's Meet, some choose to use Google Docs, but it's documents that they can work on simultaneously and together and to discuss and answer. Also with both, I have the running transcripts, so I can always print them off for myself. And it's also wonderful that I can go in, if the discussion stalls, I can go in and pose questions, or I can, while they're working with one another. And then if they don't finish their discussion, they can easily do it at home as well. They don't all have to be on at the same time. They can post. So it gives them a little bit of leeway in being able to do their discussion at school, at home. So they'll just say, okay, many of you that can be on at 5 o'clock, we'll get on, and they have their discussion. So it's taking from what we have with our literature series and then just moving it into the next slide.
And I'm Kathy Witowitz, and I'm 6th grade accelerated language arts at the middle school. And doing a lot of what Teresa just mentioned, but this particular web that's up there also comes from the William and Mary series, and it's the same type concept web, thinking about literature. And the way the students have done this is they do it collaboratively again. In the past, we've given them the paper, they go home, they do it for homework, they bring it back, we discuss it. Where here it's an interactive activity for them. When they're talking about the keywords, we were doing libraries should reflect majority values. We're getting ready to do our pro and con research. So they together decide on what do you think are the keywords that were in that reading that they finished. What ideas did you come up with? And going on to, I think, the most difficult area they have is with symbols and images. They think that any type noun in a reading can be a symbol. So this is where, again, as Teresa said, I also am able to add in comments and guide them toward what actually is the real symbolism in the reading and what are just the nouns. So that's one of the ones I use. And then the dreaded analogy. Students always have a difficult time trying to, especially at this level, figuring out analogies. And Padlet offers them a variety of options where they can take the word, they can look it up, go to dictionary.com, and one of the benefits of it, I don't think it's on here, but if usually you can click on it. Sure.
So this is live.
Okay. Is the pronunciation on there?
Yeah. I don't know if we have
sound
or
not. Okay. Mesopotamia.
There we go. A lot of times they get into words that they have no idea how to even begin to pronounce some of the words. So this is an analogy that was done in the William and Mary series. The top two are given. So what is the connection between, my contacts are dry at the end of the day, Mesozoic and Mesopotamia. And And then they are given a choice of the bottom four. If you can scroll down, Scott, a little slower, so they can see the most of, I think the best part of it is how the pictures, when they say a picture is worth a thousand words, and they can compare the top two pictures, when they have them all completed, they know that the correct answer is Jurassic is to Iberia. And that's something that they've been having. They hated it at first. It was a little difficult, but now they can go through it so quickly, and they're really building their skills as far as learning analogies.
Okay, well, I'm Dina Wilson, and I teach 7th grade accelerated language arts at the middle school. Gloucester was used to help the kids work through Tabaz's model of concept development. In 7th grade, our theme is Utopia, which is a very big idea for the kids and a very difficult idea for the kids. So this model is used at the beginning of every unit in William & Mary at all grade levels, but I really use it in depth in 7th grade because Utopia is such a hard concept for 7th graders to grasp. So we walk digitally through, using this, Gloucester, we digitally walk through the steps of the model. We begin with brainstorming, that's what number one is, and the links are not active, but if they were, it would take you to a Padlet where they would brainstorm, as you saw on the analogy and on the other webs. They would brainstorm the ideas of what Utopia is. Then we go to an actual physical gallery walk where I have charts hanging up around the room with questions, prompting them to think about different utopic ideas with post-it notes and paper, and they actually write their answers on the post-it note and put it up, and it gets the kids actually walking around rather than just sitting behind the computer. When all kids are done, I then have them sit in small groups, and I take the chart paper, the questions, and I give them to each small group of kids, and they have to then take those post-it notes, and they have to categorize them. They have to put them based on their similarities and then create labels for them, categories for them. Then we push them aside and get into something very difficult, the opposite of a utopia. And that is really a difficult concept for 7th graders as well. And once they come up with some dystopic ideas, then we give them the William & Mary generalizations, and they compare them to what they have created. And we use those generalizations in every piece of literature we read throughout the entire year. So it really makes for a cohesive learning and thinking process throughout the entire year.
Hi, I'm Denise Bukoyak. I teach the 8th grade summer of the middle school. What we have here is the novel reading chart. And this is, again, the nice thing about the William & Mary units that we use, we see the same thing over and over again. At first, you would think that's problematic, but really that consistent structure helps the kids in so many ways as they get stronger and more in-depth literature that they're going to be analyzing and using. So this novel reading chart basically is four quadrants. It has your summary section where they're basically showing their comprehension. Then you have your two important quotes section, which is basically where they're supposed to be picking out and analyzing characteristics, characterizing the characters, things of that nature. You have questions where this could be where your close reading comes in, but also where kids have the opportunity to express concerns that they have with their reading or what they do or don't understand or how might this be. And then lastly, this notes from discussion group. The kids get really excited when I assign this from the fact that you only have to fill in three of the quadrants, not four. When we meet, that's when you go to the fourth one. And this is where you see what kind of questions do we have, what was important from the discussion we had. This works all well and fine, but by the fourth time we meet on, Diary and Frank, the fourth time, it's a little bit old. We don't want to take as much time to do it. So when we were looking at this to present at William & Mary and some of the things we're doing, and Scott can go help quite a bit, if you can go to the next slide, we started to look at what type of things could we have instead. So in the four quadrants, what the kids actually have now are three to four different options using different technologies. Padlet seems to be the winner this year if we were handing out awards. Kids really like it. It's very user-friendly. But what you see there, one of them is Be Your Own Ryan Seacrest. And that's where we took the quote. And instead of just analyzing it now, they practice taking on that persona. And they actually speak it as that character would. And then they have their own commentary, too, about why it was said that way, what that actually meant. And there are some really interesting ones. We use this with a book called Desert Exile, and it discusses the internment camps that the United States put Japanese Americans in during the 1940s, which also is a mind blow for many of the students.
internment camps. And the author actually calls them, by the end of the book, concentration camps based on what was there. And the fact they had no choice to come or to leave. You'll see some of the other ones where you see the images that they can put in. They found video. But a lot of it really focused on the questions and learning further out more than what was just in the book. And again, I did this kind of as a practice before next year we'd be using the Diary of Frank, even though we created that already. And the kids really, really enjoyed it. Some of the activities that came out in the end were a couple of kids created a debate whether the internment camps were legal or not. We also had a court trial where they had one of the people that actually went to the Supreme Court and they redid the trial that changed it to their own way. And I didn't present these ideas to them. They came up with it based on what the research was and all the different activities that they had. So I did an NEI for enrichment, and those 14 kids, they wanted to come in more EIs than what we originally had planned. They did so much outside of class, so it was really a success in that way, and I'm looking forward to using it next year as well.
Finally, you mentioned the handout that our participants received. It does nothing more than kind of set the agenda for something that we try to do in this particular conference to engage our audience in learning versus just speak. So, the teachers here, they actually pulled, there was three different groups going on in our room, slightly larger than this. But it was really, really excellent to see teachers engaging teachers and talking and having good conversations about learning.
I oftentimes get questions from parents. How do you know when this interaction is taking place in the classroom, my child is on task? How does a parent know? Because that was a question that came up at our large session when we were talking about one-to-one. So I think that would be a good thing to kind of help us all better understand how we are aware if students are on or off task during these assignments.
Much like tonight, I had my first 5 minutes was a brief PowerPoint introduction. And then as these folks were talking to other teachers, I was moving about the room. And so as I was moving about the room, not only was I listening to what the participants were saying, but what they were talking about back and forth. So I think the simple answer is we move about the room, we listen to discussions, we kneel down next to our students, we talk to them, we hear what they're saying, we offer clarifications or ask more questions.
But we also do self-reflections, things like that, where sometimes you can reflect on yourself, but you can also give me that information about your group. What did you see well? And then on a side note, say, is there anything that you would like me to make sure I come by and see? Because we openly talk, because, you know, when I'm standing there, everybody's doing exactly what they're supposed to do, but when my back's turned, you know, I mean, look at us, we're adults in the same way in a lot of respects. So they'll do a lot of self-reflections as far as that goes. Sometimes we break it up as far as time goes, where we limit the amount of time, especially as Scott said, you know, what we start to see as reactions. We'll change to the next activity or maybe do something large group to get that back in. May divide it in half and focus with those kids. You know, just like parents have that, you know, that look and that stare, you know, or the snap. You know, just make sure that the proximics often helps with that. But sometimes even something as simple as an exit ticket, you can tell if they were on task, if they're completely off base. Sometimes the work that you ask them to submit by the end of the period, you can tell, was it that challenging or were you doing your math homework one step?
And with today's Meet and Google Docs, like I said, I'm watching. Is they think I'm all watching all of them simultaneously. Obviously, I cannot do that, but they think I am. So but I do make comments throughout so they know, and I can monitor who's making what comments and make comments back, which I'll walk the room. But if I'm up at my computer making comments, I can tell who's commenting, who's not, and I'll bring somebody in the conversation. So if I see, you know, three people making comments and that fourth person's not, hey, what do you think about? And then I'll put something in there to bring them into the discussion. And they also know that I can print out like a transcript, let's call it, for both today's meet and
right. So
I can go back and easily tell. I mean, that they stay up there for a while. You can set it up to a year that it will stay up there. So I can also go back and say, well, here are the comments that your child has made. And the comments I made back to them. And often when I print it, I will make comments under written comments, too. You know, that you need to participate more in the discussion. Or you need to speak a little deeper here or things to that nature.
It's also important to note that now that the majority of us have netbooks in our classroom and available to all of our students all the time, which we are so very grateful for, they are naturally engaged by what we are using, by the Today's Beat, by the Padlets, by the Gallery Walks, by all the things that we're doing. It's not just walk in, open a book, and listen to the teacher talk. Very rarely, I think, will you walk into one of our classes where we're standing in front of the teacher, or in front of the class talking. A lot of it may seem a little chaotic to the bystander who doesn't know what's going on, but we are doing exactly what Scott said. We are engaging with the students, and it could be sitting at our desk engaging with them through Today's Beat, or just walking around and listening to them. But I have found that they are much more on task when they are using tools like this than if they are just sitting there reading a book and filling out a worksheet.
Just a quick piggyback with the fifth grade presentation. We actually used Today's Meet with Parents. We had 200, you'd say, roughly. We had a list, like, yay long of comments and questions. And as I am presenting and others are presenting, we had people sitting in the front row responding in Today's Meet, answering questions immediately. When I was done presenting, I sat down and I'm typing out answers on my cell phone and just interacting with the audience. And that's just a wonderful way of immediately getting answers out there. So the questions we can answer right away right to Today's Meet at that parent night, we did. And we've had zero, I think, questions about almost anything else. And then we used all of those same comments, and they're all on the website for parents to see. So we have a variety of ways of interacting with their students and knowing exactly where they're at.
You did a fabulous job with the parent. I was there, and it was just engaging, and it was like the proof was in the pudding. You took the parents right where you're going to take the kids, and so they answered their own questions. They handed everybody a business card and said, click on this QRL. I have it in my purse.
We just gave them a business card and said, here's your handout for the night.
So you clicked on it.
So all there was a link. And then there's a QR code. If you look in the back, you can scan that and get all the information. So we're looking for a very 21st century way and innovative way to get the information to people without having to give them a lengthy handout.
But you showed them what their kids were going to go through.
Right, exactly.
And that's what I liked best about the whole presentation.
Thank you.
I would like to say one thing. In education, we talk a lot about students acquiring 21st century skills, creativity, communication, collaboration, problem solving. Well, tonight, as evidenced by our group, you can see how our teachers are using technology to make 21st century skills come to life. It's one thing, and we have many teachers that present at state-level conferences, but to be invited to present at the 20th annual national network at the College of William and Mary is something that not many teachers or administrators in our district have on their resume. So this is a very obviously elite group, a select group, and a high-powered professional learning community, and we're very, very proud of them.
Thank you.
If I can remember back when I was in middle school, this would have been a lot more interesting than my level of interest. This would be a
way to have the technology then, Mark.
This is being rolled out primarily or exclusively with gifted classes?
Yes. Well, not necessarily. The curriculum. The curriculum is from the Gifted Center of the College of London and Mary. How are the tools and everything I would use?
We could use Padlet with other classes. Yeah. We use Today's Meet with our academic classes as well. This was specifically tailored towards William and Mary curriculum.
Okay. Thanks.
You can't leave without doing an excellent.
And Scott, you're really good on the button.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
You're
welcome,
sir.
Moving on to item 1, personnel contract recommendations for the attachments 4, 5, and 6, resolved to accept the personnel and or contract recommendations detailed on the tab items listed below for the dates, terms, and other applicable conditions specified. So, Mr. Motion. Thank you.
So moved.
Second.
Mr.
board members, you have one of these that is aligned with what's happening in the tabs in front of your station. And at this time of year, as usual, we're pretty much getting through the remaining part of the year, and what you see before you in the employee count comparison is that we are actually down 1.58 employees on the boss schedule. And that was because when we reconciled or recreated our transportation model this year, when we got to the middle of the year when some folks took it upon themselves to retire, we wish them good retirement, we realized at that time that we could put a nutrition model in place. And so that's why this sheet reflects the 1.58 occurring at this particular point in time. So that's how these sheets play out. There are two items, though, that I would like to bring to your attention. First are the retirements. Mr. Dan Kalinske in the certified under tab 4, and Susan Cosmore at the high school as the guidance counselor. We want to wish both of those individuals a happy, fruitful, and certainly long retirement. And the other thing that I wanted to call to your attention was in tab 5. There was a question regarding softball. And if you remember, you'll see an asterisk at the bottom of the page. Earlier this year, on the 26th of January, we approved half of that position. And then in this list just above, you see Mr. Jim Etter, the other 50% shared position. And those are my comments regarding these documents. And call your attention again to Mrs. Stephanie Buckner, the custodian, who was moved, and we talked about that in the demo at the beginning of the conflict of the meeting. Any further questions? Roll call, please. Mrs. Brown?
Yes.
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 Mrs. May?
Yes.
Mr. Wood?
Yes.
Mr. Schitt?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item K2, resolved to renew the contract between the board and Mr. Richard Burdine as Treasurer CFO effective August 1, 2015. The following resolution in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contract set forth in the attachment tab 7. You have a motion, please.
So moved.
Second. Mr. Jansen, all the information has been provided to the board upon request and has shown the comparisons between the prior contract and the recommended contract.
Comments or questions?
I guess I wasn't clear that we were voting on this. I thought we were going to discuss it. I guess I didn't recognize we were ready to pull the trigger on it.
Because the contract is the timetable
makes no difference.
Okay. So we
because the new contract has a few changes from the old.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I thought we were going to discuss that.
We can discuss that.
Do you need to table that?
We can discuss it or table it, or discuss it and table it.
Discussion about an employee, which takes place in executive session. So if we need to discuss it, then I think we need to table it for now, right? I believe.
May I have a motion to table this item?
So you can withdraw your motion and second, and it'll just sit if you'd like. That's probably the better way to reflect that in the board's agenda.
Does the person who gave the second have to withdraw?
The person who made the motion will withdraw the motion.
I made the motion. I'm certainly willing to withdraw.
Okay.
If that's the better way to do it.
You withdraw the second.
I can do it.
Yes.
So item K2 has been withdrawn from tonight's agenda. Item K3, resolved to approve the memorandum of understanding between the Drexel Broadview Heights Board of Education and the Drexel Broadview Heights Education Association for the purpose of one-time modifications to the current agreement between the two parties as set forth in attachment tab 8. And motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
This memorandum, as stated, is a one-time memorandum, and it affords the opportunity for this employee to receive their severance payment in one lump sum as opposed to two payments for the purpose of allowing them to be able to purchase through STRS the appropriate amount of time to actually retire in this school year, as opposed to going into the next school year and maybe resigning mid-year. So this is a good situation, obviously, for the employee, and in many respects, a very good situation for our students, because in the middle of the year, that switch in the guidance department would not be in the best interest of students. No additional cost to the board. It's the same severance. It's just provided in a different format.
Well, and I'm guessing we would be saving money, because chances are very good to be replacing this person with somebody at a lower salary.
We would most likely, yes, this person is at the top of our scale from a compensation perspective and a professional perspective as well.
Right.
Any other questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mrs. Beck?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. James?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. Item L, committee reports. Financial liaison audit. Voting improvement?
We haven't met.
No. Transportation appeals?
None.
What was the best answer? Our policy committee?
We have a meeting that's coming up this week to go through our initial changes. We also provided members of the board policy and other changes, student handbook type things, for the one-to-one sixth grade initiative next year. So all of those will be coming to the board as a first reading at the May agenda, assuming everything works okay at the meeting coming up on Wednesday, but I think we'll be fine.
Cuyahoga Valley Career Center?
You got the news flash, which was nice that Kathy sent that out, and to all board members, it's graduation season, so that's always a fun time at CVCC, and negotiations is moving right along, so that's always pleasant to say.
We also have the graduation ceremony coming up, Kathleen May.
That's correct. Our student recognition, which is
I can give you the date. It is going to be May 5th at 5:30 p.m. in the Valley. Evening, that will be the reception, followed by the 7 o'clock ceremony in the auditorium, large cafeteria auditorium.
Yeah, it's exactly.
STEM committee? Any other board member reports?
I'll just mention, I don't really have a report yet, other than this week is Kappa is having their We Are the Majority rally downtown, so I volunteered to serve as a chaperone. I'm going on the field trip on the bus. And hopefully Mr. Ziegler is going to join us. So we should have lots to report next.
I'm not sure I'm up for the bus. I'm not sure they're up for me on the bus. I'm going to try to rally in my T-shirt.
We had dear graduation. That was nice, yeah, wasn't it?
Excellent.
Mrs. Bernauer was there. Is that correct? And,
and you? I thought I didn't roll.
Okay, I like to be in the audience. But yes, it was just a fabulous way to start all that. And then we had to take the drug collection at the center of town. We just had that.
Yes, we had again.
Yeah, it was great.
Very
successful. Were you there, Mike?
I wasn't able.
Okay.
To smoke.
I know, yeah.
I
just saw
trying to remember
a lot of traffic.
Oh, yeah. And boy, I shouldn't pull this out of my memory bank because they aren't that good. But Kelly sent out some information. I don't know if you've got copied on it, Debbie, of the pounds of drugs again. I mean, I think
no,
he set another record.
You know, people are just driving by and put their hands out the window.
Look at the sheer volume of stuff that we've collected over the last 4 or 5 years. I don't know exactly how long this program's been going on. That stuff would be somewhere else.
It'd be in our water system.
It'd be
in
our water
system, yeah.
Or some kid could have found some of them. I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, it really, it's a terrific effort.
Great. Item M, the board acknowledges the decision of the expulsion officer as a result of the expulsion hearing held on April 16th, 2015.
It was determined by the expulsion officer that the student was not in need of being expelled. There was a great relationship between the parents, the administration, and the person, the student involved, and truly in that individual's best interest to be back in school and to be on course. Obviously, decision was made that we would like to have not been made, but certainly it was a good day for everybody involved.
So
it's good to hear.
That's how it works. Item N, executive session to consider the appointment, employment, or compensation of a public employee for board policy 0166, item A. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
And roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Zimmer?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Board will be in executive session. There will be no further public business conducted this evening. Thank you.